This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Today, I'm honored to introduce Carolyn Robbie-Stowe, a deeply insightful therapist, coach, and brain spotting consultant who helps individuals break through subconscious blocks and design the lives they truly desire. Carolyn's work bridges the science of the brain with the art of transformation. Through her groups, trainings, and one-on-one sessions, she guides people to uncover the patterns beneath their struggles and rewire them for clarity, confidence, and purpose. Her approach is equal parts neuroscience and heart, blending evidence-based practices with the compassion and creativity needed for lasting change. Carolyn empowers others not just to heal, but to expand, to create the lives that feel aligned, meaningful, and free. So please join me in welcoming the brilliant and grounded mind behind this work, Carolyn Robbie-Stowe. Hello, beautiful souls, and welcome to the Manifestation Therapy Podcast. I'm Judy Holly, clinical social worker, trauma therapist, master manifestation coach, and creator of Manifestation Therapy. This podcast blends the wisdom of universal principles with the transformative neuroscience of manifestation, aligning conscious creation with evidence-based healing. Whether you're a practitioner or on your own path of growth, you'll find inspiration for an abundant, aligned life. In each episode, I share strategies, insights, and conversations with healers, mental health professionals, coaches, thought leaders, and individuals with powerful personal stories. Before we begin, a quick note. The views and opinions expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect my personal beliefs or the principles of manifestation therapy. This is a space for open conversation and exploration, so take what resonates, leave what doesn't, and always honor your own intuition. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks.
It's lovely to have you, Carolyn. I don't get to talk to brain spotters very often, so I'm very excited. Like, I've had a practice partner who I've been working with for years, but it's very different to actually get to hash out the joys of brain spotting.
Oh, good luck getting me to stop talking about it. You're going to regret every part of it, because to get me not to talk about brain spotting, it takes an act of God.
Well, it is a fabulous, it's the best modality that I've ever learned, and I've learned quite a few. How did you come into brain spotting? I'm just going to ask your journey into it.
Oh, yeah. So I had, before we moved on to the boat, I had a private practice. I mean, I still have my private practice, but it's virtual now because I'm nomadic. But before that, I had, you know, an in-person physical private practice, in an area north of Houston called the Woodlands. And I was doing a group program for building a private practice. And in that program, I connected with someone who was also in the Woodlands. Her name was Judith. And I love Judith dearly. Hi, Judith, if you're listening.
Lovely name.
Yeah, exactly. And so Judith and I got together just to kind of geek out on this entrepreneurial course that we were in. She was telling me about brain spotting, and we were having this conversation where I, kind of being newer to the field, had thought, you know, a lot of my clients came in and they said, they weren't interested in trauma work. They, you know, I specialize in anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder. Most of my clients don't even really, like, it's not even on their radar that they may or may not have OCD unless they're being referred from another practitioner. And a lot of my clients too were kind of childbearing age, which for some reason, right around then, OCD starts to really clarify itself. And I don't have data to back that up other than anecdotal, but right around then we start to see, oh, this is not just, you know, generalized anxiety disorder. This is actually more compulsive. And so I was talking to Judith, and I had kind of decided that I was either going to do EMDR,
right,
or I knew I needed like a bottom up processing, because I started realizing, oh gosh, like I am outmatched by OCD, because I just didn't have the tools. Like, not that I was ill prepared from graduate school, but you know, what we know now is like, you can only talk about it so much and reframe it so much.
Right.
And like exposure it so much. And we're not there with our clients, you know, to do these exposures necessarily, especially when it's, you know, for a woman who's just had a baby and it's really tied into how she is with the new baby in the house.
Yes.
And so Judith was telling me about brain spotting. And I had this moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to do one or the other. And I felt equally drawn to both. But then I realized that my clients I was working with they're Googlers. And the moment that they Googled EMDR, everything is around PTSD. And I just had this strong gut sense that that was going to turn them off of it. Whereas brain spotting, I got to be the first person to speak it into their understanding. And so I could present it, which it's true for EMDR and for brain spotting, right? That it's bottom-up processing. We're working on things that, you know, talking doesn't really get to. So it wasn't that in that moment I felt that brain spotting was better, as much as I felt like there was an advantage there and that I could present it in the way I wanted, that I believed that they needed to hear it. And so Judith and I then registered for phase one together. But the truth is, I went straight to the brain spotting website, bought phases 1 through 3, binge watched them with my notebook, and then went to phase one in person. So I pretty much fire hosed myself from day one. And I haven't learned back since.
Oh, wow. Other than the phases, have you taken any of the external brain spotting?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Let's see. I think I added up at one point about 2 years ago the number of setups that I was trained in. And I want to say it was somewhere in the 30s.
Okay.
But so I've done, off the top of my head, I know for sure. So I've done phases 1 through 5 at this point. I'm a consultant, so I've gone through that whole training. I've done from freeze to thaw. I've done the crocodile setup with Robbie Abels.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Also her hero's journey. I loved that one. I did that one too. And then just a lot, you know, I'm on the board of Rocky Mountain Brain Spotting Institute, and we're forever putting out the little like mini training. So I've done snippets of everything under the sun, but those, as far as like the full on 3-day trainings,
right?
I feel like I'm forgetting someone and I feel bad, but
that's okay. Phase 5 is the newest, right? And I missed that one. What can you just give a short synopsis on how good was it? How much did you love it?
Absolutely, yes. Well,
it
centers around the brain spotting as neuroexperiential, which, you know, David Grand kind of revealed to our community back in 2021 at the International Brain Spotting Conference. And so he's been really working since then about how to share that, you know, on a wider scale. And so phase 5 really is just some powerful ways where we're stepping away from even more from this idea that there's a specific setup for a specific issue versus just that neuroexperiential, the frame that what the client brings in and how we then compassionately take that with uncertainty and trust their nervous system, which is just very, you know, disruptive in a lot of ways in our community. And he really opens the floor for conversations about that in phase 5. Yeah.
I love that. Okay. I really hope I get a chance to.
Oh, do you? Yes. Yes.
So you live on a boat.
I do. I do. I live in the tail of the comet.
In the tail of the comet. Yeah. How do you manage to ground or like center yourself in this kind of nomadic life?
What a great question. Well, aside, so I do love self brain spotting. I love it tremendously. I am very big on in the mornings, I like to get up and get sunlight and fresh air before I ever get in front of a screen. It's just something that I've had to really, even if I just like open the door and like my glasses are the blue light blocking glasses, so I take them off and just get kind of that natural circadian boost.
Yeah.
I love if I can get the sun set too, but the odds of me not looking at a screen after sunset are pretty small, especially in the winter.
Right.
So that one I'm not as great at, but I am pretty good at getting out. You know, I try to put my feet in the water and just kind of be still and sort of let kind of the, you know, the literal grounding of touching earth.
Yeah.
happen for me in just so really simple ways. I do not have a tremendous meditation practice. It's all very like, listen, if it takes me more than 5 to 15 minutes, it's going to travel on my to-do list. I call them my to-do list travelers. It's a great idea. I so want to do it. I'm not doing it.
Okay. Was water like always one of your kind of grounding go-tos? Was this kind of a dream in the making a long time before, or did it just impulsively happen? I'm so curious.
You know, I would like to say it impulsively happened, but when I am presented with, was water always something that you were drawn to? The answer is an absolute yes. I grew up in Texas where everything is hot all the time, except for like the 3 days a year when it absolutely freezes and the whole state is in, you know, just absolute panic. But so I was a swimmer, was always by the water. You know, my mom worked for when I was growing up, and we would get up and ride our bikes to the pool and go to swim practice. And then just effectively the lifeguards would keep track of me all day. I was at the pool all day long. And then I would ride my bike home and my mom would get off work. So just really always, and you know, just always around the water truly. And I had never owned a boat. Like, we were not a boating family. My husband, we were a Navy family. My grandfather was in the Navy. So my mom grew up really around boats, sailing, things like that.
Yeah.
And my husband's dad was in the Navy. And so he also grew up around boats, sailing, things like that. In 2020, Mike and I bought our first boat, my first boat ever, his however many of. We social distanced by spending time on our boat, and we would go up and just kind of like anchor out and not, you know, and just stay on the boat for the weekend. And I was horribly anxious on it. I loved the concept. Yeah, I loved the concept, but this particular boat, I really had a hard time settling on. Like, we would be driving across the lake and he would turn around from the helm and be like, why are you crying? What's happening right now? And I would say, I don't know. It's my nervous system. I don't know. Like, I'm nervous. We're going to, you know, like, and I just had these really big fears that we're going to capsize or something.
Really?
So then when he came and he was like, there's this trip around the eastern half of the United States. It's called the Great Loop. What do you think? And I was like, oh yeah, like, absolutely. How soon can we sell everything we own and make this happen? He was like, I did not see that coming.
Okay.
But it just needed to happen. And I love that we both agreed on that. And here we are. It's been the absolute best thing for our marriage too, ever. It could have gone either way. You know, you cram two people in a tiny space with three animals. But it has absolutely made us better communicators, more compassionate towards each other. Like, just a win all around.
Okay. Beautiful. How has it affected your work with clients, or does it?
So, oh yeah, it does. When we first decided that we were going to sell everything we owned that didn't fit on a boat and go, you know, travel full time, I went on indefinite leave of absence from the therapy side. So I have two businesses where I use brain spotting. I have the therapy where I'm anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder. And then I also have a coaching and consulting business where I help people get certified in brain spotting. I'm currently beta testing a group brain spotting training. So I've got two groups going through that right now, hoping to get that approved by the specialty committees, early or late 2025, launch a new group early 2026. And then I also was helping people quit drinking with brain spotting on that side. And now I have a group where I use brain spotting to help therapists add group services to their offer menu. And so I was able to go on indefinite leave of absence, refer out all of my therapy clients and keep the coaching and consulting piece because I was actually really nervous about the stress on myself and my clients. It with me having to sort out state lines and where can I see you, like knowing in Texas, they would stay in Texas, but I know there are some states that, you know, if you're not licensed in that state, they don't care where your client is, you still can't do it. So having to really figure that out for myself. And so about a year ago, I reopened that practice just as a virtual one. And I love it. I mean, I missed it and I'm happy to have it back, but I do keep a very small number of therapy clients compared to the coaching work that I do. But let me tell you, brain spotting is all up in all of it.
Yes. Yes. Always. Talk about a little bit about this group coaching, consulting that you're doing.
So I have a program I call Hourly to Out of Office, and it is for service providers, primarily therapists, but we do have other one-to-one service providers, coaches, physical therapists, anyone really who is in a one-to-one hourly getting paid situation, who have a private practice. And let's say that you have a private practice and you love your clients and you still want, you know, the flexibility and freedom, or you still want a greater amount of income, but you don't want to overbook yourself. You're really happy. Like, I've got a caseload I love. I don't want to feel like I have to see more one-on-one clients just to live. 'Cause then I'm, you know, now stuck on the couch even longer.
Yeah.
Where, you know, in our profession or in the therapist profession, that tends to be what happens to private practice owners is either we overbook ourselves for financial reasons, or we open a group practice where now we're hiring clinicians under us. And there's nothing wrong with a group practice, but it's just not for everybody. So this is for the therapist who says, well, I want to serve one to many instead of one-on-one, and not to necessarily eliminate my one-on-one, although some people do want to. That's fine. Like, obviously, I did that for a while when I closed my private practice on my indefinite leave. But just that idea of I love what I do and this is not it for me. And so we move through, I call them the three pre-funnel playgrounds, because I think what's out there is a lot of,
right,
not misinformation, but quick information on, oh, you build a lead magnet and you grow your email list and then you put it into a sales funnel with a sales page and a launch event. And that all is very, very true. But there are foundational pieces that are getting rushed through. And so then we end up, and this happened to me, like I spent so much time building these funnels that flopped. And it was because I hadn't spent enough time in these pre-funnel stages where, so the first playground is the niche nest, where it really is, how do I start making money straight out the gate to play with these ideas and figure out what are the people that I want to work with and what is the group? Like, what do I want my niche to be? And how do I navigate, like, I just think that there's this like niche in a weekend and things like that, where it's like, well, I mean, you might come up with one, but have you tested it? Do you know if you like it? Just because you have a fancy tagline for it doesn't mean that it's the niche for you. And so after Niche Nest, we move into Offer Factory, which is how do we now create a proprietary framework or method based around, and here's the thing, therapists, we are so bad at verbalizing our magic. Like, because it feels very one-on-one and client-based, but the truth is underneath it, we are going through somewhat of a process that we can hone in. And in that Offer Factory, we're also talking about the days of the hot seat as a group offer are gone.
Yeah.
People are sick of being on a Zoom call, a coaching call with 150 people where you hope beyond hope that one person asks a question that you didn't realize you had, you know, and it's not that we don't get ahas from that, but
we need
like the thing about a group is that any group provides this opportunity for connection in a way that heals. And so just this idea of come to my group coaching call, ask a question. If you have it, someone else will ask a question. It will give you an aha. That's similar to the just build a lead magnet in a funnel. Like, we're missing something that is so powerful.
Yes.
I can't say enough about, like, why would we even have a group and not capitalize on what a group has the power to do? So that's that second prefrontal playground. And then in the third one is validation station, which is, well, let's get you proof of concept so that you know it works. You can get testimonials. You know that people want it. Then you can go build, you know, your lead magnet, your automated or semi-automated funnel. But the number one thing is we can get paid this whole time. We don't have to wait until the funnel is built. So that's my, like, main, obviously, soapbox now. And the way we bring brain spotting in is, listen, here's the thing. You could listen to what I just said and think, oh yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to do that. And then get in your own way and overthink it and procrastinate and think, oh, but is this really who I want to work with? Oh, am I really a good group leader? Really? I'm comfortable one-on-one. You know, I know it really well. Should I just be happy I have a successful private practice? Am I being too greedy? What if I risk my license or risk, you know, all this that I've worked to build? And that's where we bring in the group brain spotting in hourly to out of office. So it's like, listen, yep. So that it's not just a framework you walk through, but it's a community of bottom up processing for, well, let's make sure you actually walk through the framework. Like, I'm not interested in people paying me money to learn this framework for it to collect dust. I want people to walk through this framework, and I want brain spotting to be, I mean, not that I want it to be, brain spotting is a huge support in how you get to keep walking through the framework.
Right. Yeah. I love that. Okay. We may have another client coming up.
Come on in. The water's fine.
Yes. Talk about how you have helped supported people in quitting drinking, because I know that's a really big thing for you.
Yeah. So one of the very first groups that I ran when I was branching away from and into the coaching, away from the therapy practice and into the coaching world, my own story plays a key role in that. I was, in hindsight, what I call a Groundhog Day drinker. If you're dealing with your drinking habit right now, you've probably heard the term gray area drinker, which is this space between every now and again and addiction is kind of this gray area, right? It's where I would say probably the majority of drinkers are. And so I was in that gray area space where, you know, I knew that I didn't need anything clinical to help, but I did need something. And I spent about a year investing in different coaching programs and learning just all the information. And again, like, this is what we know as bottom up experts, right? Which is I learned the information. I knew all the things. I knew the steps. I knew how to cut back on this habit. I understood it. Like, I practically have a master's degree. I mean, I do have a master's degree in it because I'm a therapist, but I practically had an extra master's degree in how the brain works with alcohol. That information was not embodied. And so I kept finding myself on this Groundhog Day drinking cycle of shame with the Groundhog Day drinking cycle, it doesn't matter how often you're doing it. What matters is it's that repeated feeling of, oh, shoot, you know, like just waking up on Groundhog Day, right? Like the Bill Murray, you know, 1993 movie was what inspired the title, where he just wakes up. I know. And he just wakes up and it's like, ah, crap, it's that same day again, you know? And so I started, well, at that point, I was already working with brain spotting with obsessive compulsive disorder. And in the way we work with OCD with brain spotting, and this is before I had even heard of Robbie Abels and her work with addiction.
Right.
The way we work with obsessive compulsive disorder and brain spotting is we do use brain spotting to really embody the information about how a brain with OCD is functioning and why it makes you feel these compulsions, these needs, this dread if you don't do the compulsion.
Yeah. The shame.
And I thought, well, I've got all this information about alcohol. Would the same thing happen? And so I always say this on every podcast where I share this story. I'm like, I don't recommend this to anybody under the sun. I was driving home. And I do not recommend brain spotting while you're driving, but I was, I was driving past the place where I would normally just stop and grab a bottle of wine for, you know, the weekend or the night or whatever, depending on which type of Groundhog Day drinker I was at the time. Because there are three types of Groundhog Day drinkers.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I was what I would call a special occasion slipper. Like, I just generally wasn't drinking, but then like something worth celebrating would come up or something really hard would come up that was a unique situation where it was like, well, this obviously calls for a glass of wine or a bottle of wine. And so I was pulling past that, like, kind of the shop where I would normally stop. And I had this moment where I was like, what if I found a brain spot about all of these things I know, about why I'm feeling like I want to turn in this driveway, about what my brain is doing and my body is doing in this moment. And luckily it was near a stoplight, so the light was red. I found the spot and just had this moment where I was like, why would I ever want, and even now, like, I'm feeling it in my body, like, why would I ever want to drink again?
Right.
And I haven't since. And I say that, I know, and I say that not to be like, and poof, it was solved. I then realized, oh my gosh, like, that was the missing piece. Brain spotting was the missing piece for me.
So it sounds like you found the spot that connected to the wiring of how it was controlling you. So, yeah. Okay.
And, you know, the word, again, like, it was like that embodied knowing of, I don't ever want this again. But then I had to process all the social aspects of it and all the, you know, self-judgment I had and, you know, will people think I'm still fun or not and things like that. And, so then after that, so I started sharing that story and people were like, oh, have you heard of, you know, Robbie Abels? And I was like, oh gosh, no. So then I immediately took the crocodile setup.
Right.
And out of that was born Optimized AF Academy. And, that was the first group that I started using brain spotting with, was people who wanted habit change around this Groundhog Day drinking cycle of shame. And then the more I did that, the more people said, well, I want to use brain spotting in my group. I want to start a group. And so that's how Hourly to Out of Office was born.
So I don't know if you can answer this or if you want to answer this here, but I'm so curious, when you're working in a group with brain spotting and they're struggling to find the connection to the spot as an individual, how does that influence, like, how do you work with that in the group without pulling everybody out of it?
Yeah, such a good question. And that is one of the things that I'm really working to support clinicians with, licensed or non-licensed clinicians, brain spotting practitioners, right, in this new beta training for group brain spotting. And so I want to say,
right,
absolutely on the record, this is not yet an approved specialty training. Glenda Villamarine is the approved brain spotting group trainer. And so if anyone, as of today, you know, wants to like immediately dive in, she is the expert. She's actually going to be on my summit, which I don't know when this episode's going to be out, but I'm launching a summit called The Scalable Therapist, and she's going to be sharing a lot about her work with group brain spotting.
Yeah.
But the answer to that question is, there is group brain spotting.
Yeah.
And then there's brain spotting in a group.
Okay.
And they are not the same thing. And so what I teach are four frames for group brain spotting, which are how to, and this goes back to like the days of a hot seat with an audience are past us. There's still a place for that, but that being the main way that a group works is just kind of selling a group short.
Okay.
And even when we're with a hot seat, so one of the frames even does have almost that component to it. I call it, it's the Care Bear Stare is the name of that frame.
Oh my goodness.
But
I just had an image of the Care Bears.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I'm super into nostalgia. It's probably just at this age, I'm like, oh, childhood things.
Bring on the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. And so, that would be the frame closest to what we experience in a demo in one of the standard brain spotting phases, with this extra piece of,
okay,
we're not just, so the group, when we're group brain spotting,
right,
we are not just individuals. There is the individual frames, or there are the individual frames. That's my, I was an English teacher in a former life. So I just caught myself like, Carolyn, let's be a little better with our grammar there. But there are the individual frames, and then there's the frame that the group itself. And so when we can, and this is a learnable skill to attune to the group frame, Okay. Rather than brain spotting in a group, which is now I'm attuning to, you know, eight to 15 different frames.
Yeah. All these different spots.
But it is a learnable skill to attune to the group frame.
Yeah.
And then offer a brain spotting experience via that. So the Care Bear stair is one of the frames, the fire pit, the wagon wheel. What is the fourth one? Oh, it is currently escaping me. I know. I tell everybody, I'm like, menopause has eaten my brain. So it'll come back to me later. But it is just, so what I love about your question is it really emphasizes that brain spotting in a group and group brain spotting it's a very nuanced difference, but that if you want to use brain spotting with a group, you can do brain spotting in a group where you are working really hard in attuning to all these different systems. So with that being said, to answer your question directly without kind of coming through this training that I'm working on, it would be, yeah, like make sure your group is small enough that you can handle it. And you set norms at the beginning. So in the group brain spotting training, we move through three phases. We move through trust, transformation, and takeaway. And so that trust piece, that piece of the group having norms and knowing what to expect and having built in as part of the frame, we're all going to experience this differently. How do we manage that?
Yeah.
So you as a facilitator can do that. You can say, okay, we're all going to brain spot. I've done that before where I say, okay, everybody, I'm going to walk you through finding your own brain spot on your own issue. That is brain spotting in a group. There's nothing tying us together other than proximity. Like we're all here in the same space or the same Zoom room. And it just does need to be a group where you feel like you can manage. Or in that scenario, maybe you say, we're all going to do a resource brain spot. Just while we figure it out.
That's what I've done before with a group of therapists.
I think that's probably like the training wheel's easiest way for us as the facilitator to feel the most comfortable.
Right.
And it's a great place to start. It's where I started. But, you know, in the nature of brain spotting, it's a little bit like, yeah, like how do I get out of my own way with that level of nervousness about what happens if someone goes out of their window of tolerance. And what am I withholding from the group by way of that?
Yeah.
But I love it.
One of the things I love about brain spotting is, for me, it's all about the energy. And like I feel what they're feeling. The attunement is so powerful. And of course, I'm all about energy and manifestation. And what's coming to me as we're speaking about like group work is how, I mean, essentially everything is connected and everyone is connected. So the energy, I'm just imagining how powerful that is in group work. Because with addictions, and that's kind of my background as well, people with substance use or any kind of even shopping, when they're in a group, that's how they get treated, is doing residential treatment or group work or AA. When you think of those things, they're all groups. And that's because the energy of the collective serves their end result. I don't know where I'm really going with that, but that's what's coming up for me, is how the energy is, everything is connected. Does anything resonate with you?
Absolutely. Well, that's, you know, when you think about even with the frame, the wagon wheel, even just picturing a wagon wheel, you can see how there is this, like there are spokes and then connection. There's this container around the outside.
Collective,
where the spokes kind of begin and end. And then there's this connection point in the middle. And I think what you're speaking to really is that idea of what, like a hot seat with an audience or a group experience being, I'm going to do the same thing I do one-on-one, except I'm going to do it with an audience, is really selling a group experience short. Cause we're not thinking about the energy. Like it's there just waiting to be capitalized on. And it's a missed opportunity. Not that it doesn't work, but like, why not do it the way that's even better? Like, why not capitalize on what's right there, which is this group energy?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the expansion and the healing and the direction, right? Okay. I love that. How about energy and you? I always ask, what does manifestation mean for you?
You know, I am not sure what it means and I'm comfortable with that. I think, and that's a big gift that brain spotting has brought to me, which is I'm fine. And listen, I say this, I said this to David Grand even I was like, brain spotting knocked the control freak right out of me. Yeah. Like, and she went kicking and screaming. Like, homegirl was not happy to be removed from the system or from a parts perspective. Like, she was not happy to give up that job.
Right.
But the gift that brain spotting has given me is a little bit like, right. I don't really understand it. I believe that there are things that are for me and I want to make myself as available as possible to receive those things. And I believe there are things that are not for me that may still try to make their way towards me. And, you know, keeping myself in a place to discern and be open to the uncertainty of it all. And, you know, I think that really plays a huge role into why I designed hourly to out of office the way I did with this, with even beginning with this niche nest, which is
right.
There's no reason for you to know right out of the gate what this needs to look like at the end. And so that way of bringing it in and saying, right. If we start moving in these really intentional micro actions, the truth in what is for you will reveal itself. But we have to start, taking these steps in order to discern it. And so when you ask what it means to me, I think that's kind of what comes to mind the most is how do we create containers where it facilitates what is meant for us to come to us and what is not meant for us to be for us to feel in our nervous system able for it to move past without feeling like FOMO or, oh my gosh, what if I'm letting something go when really I might be letting it go so that the new thing can move in, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Doors opening. What's your biggest challenge?
In life?
Whatever comes up when I ask that.
What is my biggest challenge? I mean, what's coming to mind immediately is navigating all of these ideas that I have, right? Like, so even just in this short time we've been together, it's like, oh, I'm doing, you know, Estuary, which is the group brain spotting beta, and I'm doing Hourly to Out of Office, which is my course for group for therapists who want to add groups, and I'm launching the Scalable Therapist Summit, and you know, my husband and I are also in the process of launching a YouTube channel about the story of us moving on to a boat, which is completely unrelated. Just, you know, managing my own time and energy around what needs me right now. And that is part of these, again, and I know I keep going back to these pre-funnel playgrounds, but they are really the underpinning of how I make that possible is I can say, okay, which thing is the thing that is in which playground right now, because each playground has its own kind of energy and what it needs from me.
Yeah.
So that, and then again, the idea at the end of these prefrontal playgrounds is now I can automate or semi-automate it so that it becomes more passive and I can be freed up to do the work I love with those participants and dive into a new idea. I think, you know, call it menopause, call it, you know, 2025, but it's this idea that I'm one area of expertise with one good idea and one niche just doesn't land well with me or with any of the people I work with. It's so we have a saying and we talk about like, you don't need a niche. Each service you offer needs a niche.
Right. Yeah.
Because a niche is a marketing, exercise. It doesn't mean you have to be limited to that, but to try and do all of these ideas at once, and listen, take it from me, to try and do all of these ideas at once, you're going to light a match to the whole thing. You're going to want to burn it down.
Right.
And so
you never finish.
Exactly. And so I think, and I also am not an advocate of pick one idea and stick with it to the end and then pick the new idea, stick with it to the end. Like we just are, our energy is too fluid. And so we have to have this opportunity to capitalize on ideas, but in an intentional way. And so that I think is my biggest challenge is being such a, I want to do all the things. Like, listen, this cabinet behind me is full of crochet supplies and craft supplies because I love it. There are two sewing boards on board this vessel. But just being able to not balance at all, but be able to move within.
Ah, I like that. Yeah. The flexibility.
You know, in fluidly between these gifts and these callings without then feeling like I don't also have time to sit and read a book. That's my biggest challenge.
That's why I listen to books now. What comes to me when you say all that is ADHD. And I have been diagnosed recently, like in the past few years, but now my whole life makes so much sense because it was so clear. But, and yet I was always understood ADHD, studied it, had relatives that were, and yet never saw myself as. Anyway, my question that I always ask is, how does ADHD or neurodivergency come into play in your professional or personal life? You sound like you have some awareness of it, perhaps, but where is it for you?
Can I do a quick plug for someone?
Yeah, sure.
One of my very good friends, her name is Patricia Sung, has a podcast and a course called Motherhood in ADHD, and she is my go-to for all things.
Okay.
Adult diagnosis, all okay. Like she is my go-to. Major plug, her podcast, Motherhood in ADHD. If the idea of being an adult woman with ADHD resonates,
okay,
find her immediately. And tell her Carolyn said hi. But for me, I think I sit around in this state of, could it be? Maybe. Do I need to name it that? Not necessarily today. I've also designed a life. Like, boat life is very different from land life in so many ways. You know, there are just multiple, like today, you know, we've got the kind of the outer bands of Hurricane Erin are moving up the coast of the U.S. today. And so we're getting this major wind. And so having a life where it is an option for me to, like, this is as nice as I'm ever going to look.
Yeah.
Like, I'm forever ready just to jump on deck, you know, tie some ropes, do something, you know, or, you know, learning to work and be attuned underway when the boat is and my chair is rolling back and forth. So really having to do for myself this idea of
it works,
you know, neurodivergence or not, I've created a life where consistency and stability don't look the same way as they did in land life. And if I go and look for someone to help me with that, odds are they're giving me the strategies and tools and tips that work really well for a life that, structure. You know,
for structure,
your pots and pans don't roll around.
Yeah.
So just really already being in a space where I'm having to tweak everything anyways. Sometimes I just think, like, do I just love a challenge too much? Is that what's happening here? Right. Do I just really need to make things as difficult as possible for myself?
Well, it sounds like with my brain, like I have four windows open with, like, I don't know, this one has like 50, but anywhere from 20 to 50 tabs open. And for me, that works. So it sounds like boat life is like your mini windows with all these tabs open.
I do. And I just counted. I have 20. There are 20 tabs currently open right here on this screen in multiple Chrome windows. My husband's like, no wonder the computer's always so slow. Stop doing that. I'm like, I need them.
And if it closes,
I've closed as many as I can.
Yeah, right. It works.
But yeah, it does work.
I know you plugged Patricia, and I'm going to look her up myself. But who are some of your mentors that you look up to? Obviously, David Grant.
Oh, gosh. Dr. Pi Fry is my brain spotting mentor for sure. She and Cynthia Schwartzberg were my very first trainers. It was Pi's first training back after her brain surgery.
Yeah.
And so they co-facilitated and... so I have stayed really connected with both of them. Cynthia and I actually just got together last week to talk about group brain spotting and the work that she's doing with, I'm not going to be able to think of the name of it right now because menopause ate it, but she's great. But then Pi was my trainer for my consultation certification. And then obviously now we work together on the Rocky Mountain Brain Spotting Institute board. So she is my number one brain spotting mentor for sure. Katie Reed has been a mentor for me with how to really expand beyond my private therapy practice. I did her clinic coach certification when it was in beta launch, and she and I, you know, talk a lot about funnels, the pre-funnels, things like that. So we love geeking out on that. She's very big into She's written some custom GPTs for marketers now, which are amazing. And I've been beta testing those with her and they are so fun. She's launching one of them off. She's going to come speak at the Scalable Therapist, and she's sharing some of that, which I love. Laura Long was my very first business coach with Your Badass Therapy Practice, which she no longer offers. But she is a tremendous mentor of mine in terms of just building that community of like-minded people who are not going to say, that's ridiculous. Like, why? Don't do that. Like, just be happy with what you've got. She's very much like, no, like we can do.
You can have it all.
We can do whatever we want. You know, like she just, it's a very empowering mentorship. Yeah. I know that I'm like leaving so many people out, but the three of them are really the ones when I think
that's
from day one with each of my businesses, those are the people who were my first supporters and who have stayed supporters since.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we've kind of left out that you want to talk about?
Gosh, what a great question. I love brain spotting so much. And I think that I want people to understand how it can play this really powerful, like ancient wisdom role in so many aspects of life outside of just the traditional trauma work of therapy.
Yes.
And just that I hate to see it boxed in the way, going all the way back to where we started, which was, you know, my clients are Googlers. For it would be a travesty, in my opinion, for brain spotting to get that same box around it of PTSD. Not because it's not amazing for PTSD, it is, but the idea of it ever being limited to that really just hurts my heart. Because this is something that we are learning, and this is part of, you know, going back to phase five and the neuroexperiential model. Like,
no,
we know that this is not something that David Grand concocted out of thin air, that he just noticed something that communities around the world have known for as long as we can remember. And he, similar, this is like, we're just putting a bow on this. This is great. Look at us. We're doing such a great job. You know, he was the person who said, there's a method here. And even though therapists, we struggle to say, this is what I do because it feels very individual.
Right.
He said, it is very individual. These are the components that are, that we need to understand are at play so that we can take what's already happening naturally and really offer it in a powerful way.
Yeah.
And so I think that for me is the one thing that I feel very passionate about. I think about, you know, we've mentioned menopause, like being in menopause, I'm working with various, you know, coaches and supports for that. And they all are also brain spotters. So I've got a physical therapist who's helping me with pelvic floor therapy and we brain spot. And I've got, you know, my emotional well-being coach who helped me through menopause and helped me. We developed moon spotting, which was, okay, how do I self brain spot with the cycles of the moon? Because my internal cycles are like gone, like they are out to lunch. And so how do we bring in existing cycles? And so now I moon spot with my self brain spotting practice.
I love that.
So just really this idea that
there's no limitation.
We are so unaware. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And just the creativity of it and that it's such a community that fosters that creativity and honors it, I think is my favorite.
One of my favorite brain spots to do with people is helping them connect with their purpose, their life purpose.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. And it just has this way of like introducing synchronicity into their lives because then things just start rolling. And I don't know if you've found this over the years, but I find that most of my clients will be like, I don't think it was the brain spotting. I'm like, it's always the brain spotting. Well, you can think that if you need to.
I love that. It's always like, okay, maybe not. Do we need to know? Like, do you care if it was the brains? Like, I'll say that to them if they're like, well, I don't think it was the brain spotting. I think it was this other thing. And I'm like, does it matter? Like,
but I know. Okay.
The great news is it's better, right? Right. But I had a colleague, Rebecca Gilbert, who wanted to try brain spotting, and she tried it. And afterwards she was like, meh. okay, I'm not sure anything happened. Yeah. And so she came on my, on the Brain Unblocked podcast, and she did an episode to talk about it, because a couple days later she had a moment where she realized the very thing we had brain spotted was going the way that she had hoped instead of the way it had gone. And so she like immediately reached out and was like, oh my gosh, shut up. Like this worked. And just kind of, but you know, we don't notice it as much. Like it's hard to notice the absence of a problem unless we're really keyed into, to being on the lookout for it.
One more question. What is the message that you would give the entire world if you could in a couple sentences?
Other than I don't want brain spotting boxed up, I think.
There you go. No, that works.
Yeah. I think on that, it would also be just the one that's really on my heart these days is that group work is not, it is not just for us to make more money in less time. That is a tremendous side bonus.
Right.
Group work has the potential when we really honor appropriate group facilitation, which is a learnable skill, when we really bring that into it, it is so much more powerful than just I'm doing the same thing I do in with an audience.
Beautiful.
That's just selling it short, and people can continue doing that all they want, and I'm happy for them to do that. But if you want a group that is life-changing for someone, I want to help because I share that desire. That is my main message for people, that you're right. Groups can be more than just what they are looking like these days.
Okay. And where do people find you?
I have a private podcast, I think would be the step one. It's called the Therapist Travel Fund, because I really do go into these pre-funnel playgrounds and these stages where it is like, okay, how do I get the money without just doing this like low level group where it's like, ugh, or a funnel that flops where it's just for the sake of the money, which for, you know, it just feels icky. So people can get that at carolynrobisto.net/secret podcast. Yeah. And it has all the rest of my information, like what to do if you want, you know, to connect more. That would be a great place to start. And then I'm barely on socials, but if I am, it's Instagram at Carolyn Robisto.
Okay. Perfect. Fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it was lovely having you.
Thank you so much. This was fun.